from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. Welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support from listeners like you. And from the Palladium at the Center for the Performing Arts, opening in January 2011.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Travis DiNicola. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Baselli Wallrab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Sharon Gamble. Today I'll chat with cabaret singer Roger Schmeltzer about his upcoming show at the Columbia Club.
I'll get a preview of the Indianapolis International Film Festival.
And I'll learn a bit about the history of the importance of paper in art making. And of course we'll have our arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. Roger Schmelzer thinks cabaret is a many splendored thing. You might recall his conversation with Sharon about his debut CD, About Now, and the party promoting it a couple years ago. Well, this Saturday, Roger is premiering Roger Schmelzer, Heart Songs, a playfully romantic cabaret, at the Cabaret at the Columbia Club. And he dropped back in to sing the praises of classic American pop standards and contemporary cabaret songs.
All right, a couple of things have happened that I want an update on since you were last on this program. One is you made your cabaret debut in Chicago.
Last summer at Davenport's in Chicago.
How did that come about?
Well, I had attended a cabaret seminar at Davenport's and had been there actually before that. And I just approached the management at Davenport's and said, I think I can bring an audience in because I have a lot of friends in Chicago, and I have this CD, and I've got a body of work I'd like to sing, and they said, okay.
Wow. And was it what you expected?
It was better than I expected. I mean, it's kind of one of those things where you know, it's your idea, and you launch into it, and you just hope it's all going to work out, and it worked out. I'm my harshest critic, and I actually came back and told people that it was good.
Then that's saying a lot. Is there a kind of an odd question, but I have to ask, is there a difference between preparing a show, preparing a song list or whatever in Chicago as opposed to here? Do you pick different material? Do you have any kind of different mindset or...
No, I wouldn't say so, although this show is different than the one we did in Chicago, because what we did in Chicago, we didn't have to have an intermission. We do for the Columbia Club, so I need two pieces, because the one piece I had in Chicago really flowed, and so now I need two separate pieces. And it's a great opportunity, actually, to develop some new material that isn't on the CD. I really wanted to add to the repertoire.
And I remember when we talked before, it was ahead of your CD release party, which was October of 08.
Yes.
Man, and time flies. and I remember you had too much material for one CD, and you were thinking, ooh, maybe a second one, or at least more material to develop.
Right. Yeah. And in fact, what we're doing with this, we are recording it live with the idea that it will be a live CD at some point, from the Columbia Club, the cabaret in Indianapolis. It's something that I care a lot about and want to promote.
The other thing that's happened to you since we talked is you've gotten married.
I know.
All right. So the romantic in me says you put an album called Heart Songs out there in the world and it led you to a new love.
Well, you know, it's funny. I started the Heart Songs theme about 15 years ago when I was doing shows at Raleigh's Dinner Theater.
Oh, wow. There's a blast from the past.
Well, Raleigh's Dinner Theater doesn't exist. Now it's Comedy Sports on Mass Avenue. And I set it aside for a while, not the idea, but the show, just had other things to be doing.
Sure.
And then picked it up again about 5 years ago. I keep joking that originally it was a four-person show, and I've now got it down to one. yes, it was that. Also, last year, I gave the commencement speech at Indiana State University, and I gave which is where I went to school.
Mm-hmm.
And my theme was the power of and, A-N-D.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea being that there's always more you can do. You don't have to say no to anything. And one of the things I said you should say yes to is love. And so those two concepts really kind of came together. I did the CD before I met my wife, but I was putting the show together for Chicago while we were courting. And so all of these songs that I had discovered and put on this disc took on entirely different meanings. And so I'm really excited now, because what we're going to do in Indianapolis is I've got a little subset that is that's devoted pretty much to those experiences of falling in love with her.
And the cabaret played a part in your meeting.
Well, it did. My wife Lucinda and I, she wasn't my wife then, we attended the second night, I think the third show of the cabaret when it first opened in April.
Which was?
April 25th, and it was David Burnham. We had never met before. I was with a friend, and she was with her mother. And my friend knew her, knew Lucinda, and introduced us. And it was electric, an immediate match. And just, you know, just a total shock, but a terrific shock.
And it's interesting, too, because everybody thinks people may know that you do musical theater, and so does your fairly, as we're having this conversation, new bride.
Yes.
And everybody thinks, theater is such a small community, everybody knows everybody else, and you'd never cross paths.
I'd never even heard of her, and she'd never heard of me. And it just was funny the way that worked out. And we have tons of mutual friends, again, something neither one of us knew.
Who never thought to put you two together.
Never did. In fact, on our first date, we were out somewhere, and one of our mutual friends said, finally, these two people get together. They belong together.
Oh, my gosh.
But nobody thought of it before.
I love it. I love it. So here's an odd question, too. As a musician, as a singer who is singing songs with this amazing content, songs like Bewitched, songs like My Funny Valentine, is it all technique when you go out to sing, or can you allow yourself the luxury, if you will, of thinking about the content of these songs each time you sing them?
I really only think about the content each time I sing them. I obviously that's why you rehearse, is to make sure you're singing them well, and remember your words. But I try to get the technique down and well before I take the stage, because I really only want to think about the meaning of the songs when I'm singing them. That you may remember, that's why I called the CD About Now. Because it was the idea being that these are songs that are in the present, in the present moment. And I try to really get that across in the live performances.
So your folks who are with you playing instruments have to really pay attention to one another and to you. And that's kind of a classic bromide for any live music, but in particular, you know, one night you might just hold that last note a little extra.
Yes, and we actually we've pared down the group. I now just have an accompanist, Mark Timko, who played for me on the CD, Mark, he has to follow me. He has to see what I'm doing and how I'm doing it, and he's a beautiful in the moment accompanist. I mean, I just couldn't ask for better. He really gets inspired, and he adds so much.
How did you decide the order of these songs? And I also want you to talk about the songs themselves, because a lot of them are classic torch songs, love songs, but some are from composer David Lipps, who's local, and some are maybe not quite as well known.
Well, I did some groupings. I sort of start, I mean, the idea of this is that love is awfully serious unless you decide that it's not going to be. So that's why it's heart songs, a playfully romantic cabaret. I don't really think that my best thing is standing up and just crooning one romantic song after another. I think it has to be peppered with some variety, a lightheartedness. And so I sort of start with some what I would call playful type songs. I talk about in the first act, a lot of it is about my personal journey in general, about learning about love, and so each song is. For instance, you use Bewitched as an example. I talk about how it doesn't matter how many times you fall, you still fall. And so we do Bewitched, and then immediately after that, do a song called Fallen, which is the deeper piece of falling in love. It's easy to fall in love. You're not paying attention to what's going on. And sometimes people sit up at night and they say, hey, what happened to me? So Bewitched is about that great Twitter-pated feeling, whereas Fallen is about that you know, sort of the not scarier side of love, but the deeper piece of love.
Mm-hmm.
So I try to do groupings like that, you know, to do something that kind of gets the initial idea across and then take it one step further.
Married I Can Always Get. I have to ask about this tune. I'm not familiar.
This is a song that Gordon Jenkins wrote in the 50s. Patti Page did it. It's part of a piece that he wrote called Manhattan Tower. And Robert Goulet recorded it in the 60s. And I always loved that song. It's clever. It's wordy. I love the melody. I love everything about it. And we had actually recorded it for the CD, but couldn't quite finish it. And it's a perfect cabaret piece because it's really very funny. And it works perfectly in this show now, especially because I'm able to say, you know, this is not a statement. It's just a song. And obviously, you know, Married I Did Get.
Yeah.
And so now let me tell you about my wife and how much I love her.
What do you think about it's not that new, but it is still relatively new, the space at the Columbia Club?
I love it. It's great. You know, anybody who's been on the third floor in the Crystal Room, you know, it's a big room. But it really transforms for the cabaret. There's curtains that are put up. The windows are curtained. It's just made much more intimate. It's not a small room like you know, the Cafe Carlyle in New York City or the Raz Room in San Francisco. But it is the kind of room that's really a challenge, I think, for a cabaret singer, because it's all about establishing that relationship with the audience. And if you can do it there, you can really do it anywhere. So it's a terrific room anyway, and all the shows that I've seen there so far, I mean, the singers have you in the palm of their hand. So it's you know, a big standard for me to try to meet.
Sharon Gamble with Roger Schmelzer. Roger's show, Heart Songs, a playful romantic cabaret, is at the cabaret at the Columbia Club this Saturday night, July 17th at 8 p.m. Call 275-1169 for tickets. Let's listen to a bit of Roger.
They can throw old shoes, but they won't get me. Not me. I want to dance until the darkest heavens turn gray, until the dawn strolls in with the day. Then I'll say, don't let the band get away. For matrimony, I'm not ready yet. Married, I can always get. It's not for me, with all its smug connubial joys. That ever constant smashing of toys wrecks your poise, and I'd rather be out with the boys. I want no part of that deadly duet. Married, I can always get. I'll live the life.
You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio.
Because by now I have found the nicest things are on a merry-go-round.
Since 2004, the Indianapolis International Film Festival, or just the Indy Film Fest, has quickly grown into one of the Midwest's fastest-growing and most-watched film festivals. This year features 10 days of movies, workshops, panel discussions, and parties. The 2010 programming director Lisa Trifone and board president Dorothy Henkel gave Travis DiNicola a preview.
Dorothy, Lisa, welcome to Art of the Matter. Great to have you both here.
Thank you so much.
And I appreciate you coming in. Right now, actually, as we're airing this, the film festival is full throttle, right in the middle of it. But we're recording this right before it kicks off, so I appreciate the time, because I know you guys have a lot to do this week.
Our pleasure. It's a worthwhile stop on our schedule.
Let me just start by asking this. I want to be clear about this. It's the Indianapolis International Film Festival. Also, though, referred to as the Indy Film Festival?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. No, you're
so
right.
So both international and independent and all those things.
And
I'm just
all
trying
those
to keep
things.
All straight.
Well, you'll notice that it's Indy Film Fest, I-N-D-Y. So it's the city we're referring to there. We are Indianapolis's film festival.
Yes, you are.
We decided to sort of keep the my name is Margaret, but my friends call me Maggie kind of approach to it. So we are the Indianapolis.
Or Dorothy and Dottie.
Exactly.
Yes, exactly.
So we are the Indianapolis International Film Festival. That was something we felt really strongly about, keeping that full name. Mm-hmm. We bring films in from around the world. But it's a mouthful when you try to talk about it with your friends and reference it as something that you're a part of. We all call it and invite everyone to call it the Indie Film Fest.
Indie Film Fest. Okay, great. So yeah. It started in 2004. But what I wanted to ask you about is, as it's grown, how is this film festival different from other film festivals that go around in town, or why is it different from just, like, you know, going to the movies or renting a video? I mean, you know, you mentioned that it's for Indianapolis. It's our film festival.
Right.
But tell me more about that.
Yeah. I think the exciting part about it is the audience that we serve. You know, we're not a Sundance that's catering to maybe the glitterati of Hollywood. We're not Tribeca. You know, we're seeking to bring these films to an audience that otherwise wouldn't get to experience them. We're bringing the films to you. As far as different than going to a movie on a Friday night, it's actually not very. Come on out, come catch a movie. I think the biggest difference is that they're all concentrated. They're all right mm-hmm. on top of each other for a 10-day span. So, you know, don't dally. Get down while it's going on. Come on down.
And there's like 100 movies or something?
Over
100.
Yeah.
That's so crazy. And all types. I mean, documentaries, feature films, shorts.
And international films, too. So we definitely have some with subtitles.
Right.
Now, and this year, like last year, the entire festival is taking place at the Indianapolis Museum of Art. Is that correct?
Everything is at the IMA except a single presentation. We have a special presentation on Tuesday night. Mm-hmm. It's actually an IMAX film, so we couldn't host it at the IMA. But it's an advanced screening of a film called The Wildest Dream.
Okay.
So that's the only exception, but we would encourage you to find either that film or others going on that night.
And where's that one going to be showing at?
It's at the IMAX at the State Museum,
at
right
State
downtown.
Museum. Okay,
yeah.
Very good. But everything else is going to be at the IMA.
Right there.
Yes.
And now, does every film air once, twice? I mean, I know you've got a schedule online at indiefilmfest.org, but if you miss it once, is there a chance to catch it again, or how's that work?
Normally, generally they're shown about twice. So.
You've got a lot of charts in front of you, so I imagine that just the logistics of, like, organizing this is
it's crazy.
Takes a lot.
It's best not to ask, actually. No, most films screen twice. There are a few exceptions that, given time constraints, we could only screen once. And then there's also what's really exciting is the festival goes until July 25th.
Mm-hmm.
Our closing night, though, a lot of people may have noticed, is July 24th. Well, the 25th is a really special day of screenings. On the 24th, we'll announce all of our award winners. So we have mm-hmm. Best in Category. We even this year have an award for the Grand Jury Prize. We're giving $1,000 to the best film of the
wow.
festival, which is
okay.
the first year for us to do this. We had a great jury of a programmer from the AFI Fest, a woman from the documentary channel, some great eyes on those films. But anyways, those award winners will screen on Sunday. So if you miss what end up being the big names, the big winners at the festival,
then you can catch them on that last day.
You can catch them on Sunday, the 25th.
That's very cool. That's
yeah.
great. That's a great addition this year. Now, I know that speaking of additions, along with all the films that you have going on, there's also a series of workshops and panels and things like that. Tell me a bit about what's going on with that.
Well, we had panels and workshops mm-hmm. a couple years ago, actually several years ago, and we kind of cut that out last year, but we heard from our audience, and they definitely wanted them back, and they've been a huge success, and we've had a lot of people reserve. So if we do fill up, we do have a chance that we may actually hold additional workshops. So,
and
really
these are workshops for filmmakers?
They're for both filmmakers and for just the regular film goer.
Yeah.
I am really looking forward to the critics versus the filmmakers cage match.
Yeah,
just awesome.
I did see that.
But we also have...
Okay, but tell me more. I mean, are they in a cage?
Well, no, they won't actually
if
be in a
only.
Cage. Yeah, but that's a really good idea. I'll see what I can do before then.
I think the IMA could build you guys a cage for that. Sure.
Tara Donovan, she's totally on that.
Right.
So, and then we also have programs for youth and then also filmmakers. So we just have a whole mix. I think in total we have... four workshops, and then we have about four panel discussions.
So. Now, are these things, are they open to the public? Are they free, or is there a fee for them? Because I mean, there is a fee to go to the movies.
Right. Mm-hmm. But the workshops and the panel discussions are free to the public.
Okay.
You just have to reserve for the workshops.
Very cool. Hey, Dorothy, I want to ask you, because you're, as the board president, obviously you're a volunteer in this. What is it that draws you into this film festival? Why do you volunteer your time and are a part of it?
Well, you know, I... pretty much considered movies and TV the biggest waste of time until I went to the 2004 Film Festival, which was the first one, and pretty much drugs, kicking and screaming. And I fell in love, just absolutely. I watched a film called The Story of the Weeping Camel, and just worked on becoming a part of it. And it's definitely something, you know, volunteering, all volunteers, you know, always just feel a different sort of, you know, sense of worth and value whenever they are volunteering for a worthwhile.
That film really got you. I mean,
it really did. It really did. And it still, it stays at the top of my favorite films ever.
Wow.
So.
Well, and I'm curious because, I mean, obviously you had seen films before that, but there was something about, I mean, the festival itself that also drew you in? Or?
Oh, absolutely. Just the ability to talk to filmmakers after a film. It just really changes the entire experience of watching a film. So getting to know why a filmmaker chose to make a film and what he went through or she went through in order to make it. So,
Lisa, let me ask you, as the program director this year, obviously you had to sort through many, many, many films, watch many films, and we don't have nearly the time to list them all. Again, they are on the website. But how do you go through that process of selecting the films?
You know, it's an exciting process, and I think it wasn't until we sat with every film had an index card and we were placing it in this sort of spread on a table grid motif of where do they all fit in, like a puzzle together. But, you know, there are several films that were submitted really early on in the process, even, you know, November, December, they were sent our way, and just sort of stayed at the top of the list, just held their own weight through all the hundreds of submissions that found our way. So at the end of the day, it comes down to quality. It comes down to story. You know, all of us on the board, like Dottie said, are film lovers, and we're right here in Indianapolis, just like everybody that would come out to the festival. So it's about, you know, what resonates and while instilling some diversity to it, while bringing in sort of the tapestry of it's not just your everyday film.
Sure.
It's
now, exciting. I know you can't really pick favorites, but there's got to be a couple films that you are just dying to see again, or you're really trying to make sure that people get to.
It's like asking me to select my
favorite
children.
Child?
You just can't ask a girl that. No, you know, honestly, it's so hard because even down to the shorts and sorting out which shorts played with which others and even the order that they play in the program was labor of love and making sure it was an experience that could be translated to an audience. But there's one film that actually comes up late in the week. It's a Finnish film called Twisted Roots. I watched a lot of films this year, and it was the only one that made me cry.
Well, that's a good one right there.
It was a pretty powerful film, so I would definitely keep
that
out.
Is it documentary or?
It's a narrative feature from Finland. It's Friday night that it plays. You know, documentary wise, I saw a film in Austin at South by Southwest called When I Rise, and we were able to bring that one to Indianapolis. I talked to the filmmaker down there, and so now that film's here as well, about Barbara Conrad Smith, or Barbara Smith Conrad, I might have just gotten her name wrong, an opera singer who faced discrimination in the 60s in Texas and went on to become one of the, you know, leading operatic stars of her generation. And it's just a powerful film. Funny films, you know, Fish Out of Water is a great, funny documentary that'll make you laugh as it kind of tackles some heavy subjects. New Low is a hilarious, neurotic comedy, you know, just a 20-something, who is this dude, why is he, you know, have so many issues kind of thing, just makes you giggle.
Dorothy, how about you? What are you really looking forward to seeing in the next couple days?
Well, you know, I'm really looking forward to seeing A Little Help. And that stars Jenna Fischer from The Office. I cannot wait to see that. I actually haven't watched every single thing in the festival, but I'm dying to see that. Also, our opening and closing night films. So
sure.
So that'll be pretty exciting. Along with, you know, of course, we have parties after the opening and closing night films, which, you know, can't ever
parties
hurt.
Parties are always good.
Yeah.
Now, if someone wanted to, they can actually, like, get a crazy pass where they get to see, like, what, everything, like 100-plus films or something.
Yeah, for $150, you get to
see. It's actually not a bad deal.
Anything you want.
You
get to get into everything film festival related. So it's actually a really good deal.
Okay, or you can just go to individual films, and are they priced separately, or how does that work?
You could show up at any film, unless we do have a special for Before Five, mm-hmm. Pretty much veterans, students, and
members of the IMA,
mm-hmm. and seniors get in for $5.
Okay.
Otherwise, all of our other films, besides the special presentations for opening and closing, are $10. So you can just show up and buy a ticket.
Okay. And there's some other packages as well, and that's all on the website. What about popcorn?
Totally popcorn. Actually, that was a conversation that we had in our planning stages was, we love the IMA, they must have popcorn.
Right.
Popcorn and candy.
Now, films are shown in the Toby, which, right.
Correct.
But there's also films that are shown in other locations in the IMA.
There's one other screen.
Okay.
We've got a screen at the DeVos Lecture Hall, which is kind
yes.
of just around the corner.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just so that we can show more.
Mm-hmm.
It really affords us the opportunity to sort of give audiences a variety. If what's showing in Theater A isn't your cup of tea, maybe what's in Theater B will be.
Okay.
So.
Great.
Yeah.
Great. Any other highlights you guys want to touch on?
I would definitely say visit the site. It's indiefilmfest.org. We're on Facebook. You can follow us there. We're on Twitter at Indie Film Fest. So definitely
check us out. Will there be any film celebrities possibly showing up, especially that we want to find out about by following you guys on Twitter? Or?
Absolutely. That's the best way to find out, because there's a lot, you know, that the pieces are still sort of in play, even
mm-hmm.
at this late date, sort of arranging flights and everything. So definitely keep an eye out for announcements about opening and closing night.
Okay.
And I know we've got filmmakers throughout the week who'll be coming and going.
Great. And all through indiefilmfest.org, the best way to find
yes,
out, right?
Definitely.
Yes.
Great.
We also have a program coming out in the Nouveau, and every Nouveau this Wednesday.
Travis DiNicola with Indie Film Festival's Program Director Lisa Trifone and Board President Dorothy Henkel. The festival runs from July 15th through the 25th at the IMA. For more information, visit indiefilmfest.org, indiefilmfest.org. Travis.
Yes, Sharon.
I have sad news from out in the world of retail.
What is that, Sharon?
All the retail stores are getting into full back-to-school swing.
Already? It's just the middle of July.
It is. I was at a certain local discount beloved big box vendor who had moved all of their seasonal stuff to one little corner. All the pool supplies, all the solar lights, all that kind of stuff, to make way for notebooks. And
you know, all that means is it's a great time to get your swimsuit on sale right now.
That's right.
There you
and,
go.
But your days are running short to work some art into your
very
summer.
Good.
So we have some things for you to do on our calendar thing we call
What'll we do? Well, I've got a heart for this. Yes, the Heartland Actors Repertory Theater, also known as Heart, is again doing Shakespeare on the Canal this summer, and they have finalized their performance schedule. They are performing The Two Gentlemen of Verona with three performances on August 6th and 7th at 8 p.m. and also on Sunday, August 8th at 2 p.m., which is great. And everything's free, and they're also having concerts before each performance, which is really cool, and it features some great local actors like Robert Neal. And it's just going to be a ton of fun. Michael Shelton is the artistic director. It's going to be just a great evening. So we finally know everything that's going on with
Woo-hoo.
Heart.
Hey, speaking of theater, Stage Actors Workshop is trying to get some people together to audition for a new production that's called Nancy Nightingale's Bed and Breakfast, or Whose Strange Voice Is That? And it's about a spunky heroine, Nancy Nightingale, who's out to prove herself in the world. Her plan is to take her deceased gangster uncle's abandoned roadhouse and turn it into a successful and family-friendly establishment. And, of course, there's romance and heartbreak and some hanky-panky and some ne'er-do-wells and all that kind
hanky-panky.
Of stuff. Hanky-panky, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
And Stage Actors Workshop is holding auditions for this, and you can get more information by emailing SAW, that stands for Stage Actors Workshop, get it, SAW_theater, THEATER, at yahoo.com. SAW_theater@yahoo.com to get a little bit more information about that, if that sounds like something you'd like to audition for.
Very cool. Hey, if you're an artist and you are wanting to get your work seen, then maybe you want to consider entering it into the competition to get your work as part of the new Wishard. Wishard Hospital is seeking proposals for art as part of their new building that they are working on, and they are taking submissions through August 16th. So this is a really great opportunity for the hospital to feature local artists. You can get more information if you go to the website, thenewwishard.org. And just a note here, Julia Moore, who is the public art administrator over at Blackburn Architects, who organized all the art at the airport,
right.
is also also organizing this. So
she
again,
gets around.
There you go. Should be a great competition. Again, August 16th is the deadline. Check out the new Wishard.org for information.
Excellent. Hey, if days are growing short for your little ones to get back to school, here's something kind of cool. The remaining Wednesdays through August 4th, there are programs at the Harrison Home that are specially designed for grandparents and grandchildren based on Victorian stories of hope and possibility. You get a guided tour of the historic Harrison Home, which includes recitation, readings of nursery rhymes and classic Victorian stories, and playing of Victorian games on the president's lawn. So that's kind of cool. And the program is called Top Hats, Tails, and Tea Parties. Top Hats, Tails, and Tea Parties. And you can find out more online. Just Google Benjamin Harrison Home.
Very fun.
Yeah.
Hey, the symphony is spending a lot of time outside during the summer. Of course, they're up at Connor Prairie for Symphony on the Prairie. And this weekend, their sci-fi spectacular featuring George Takei from Star Trek, which is so cool. I'm so excited about that. So he's going to be narrating it and appearing as a special guest. He played Mr. Sulu, of course.
Yes,
but also something planned for is the ISO is going to be presenting a free concert at Ellenberger Park. They do this every summer.
Mm-hmm.
And this year it's going to take place on July 20th at Ellenberger Park on the east side in the Irvington neighborhood. And Copeland, Stravinsky, and Holtz are all going to be highlights as part of this year's annual outdoor program. That should be great. And that concert will begin again on July 20th at 7:30 p.m. And you can picnic out there.
Excellent. Have a little bit of a road trip if you're a theater lover. Maybe you want to pop down to IU's Brown County Playhouse, which is in its 62nd season of live theater in Nashville. The production going on right now is Larry Shue's The Nerd, and the cast is composed of several Master of Fine Arts acting students from IU and a professional guest artist named James Craig, whose credits include appearances on ER, Prison Break, and the films Mercury Rising and While You Were Sleeping. So, pretty cool cast as well. So The Nerd going on at Brown County Playhouse.
There's an exhibit at the Indianapolis Marion County Central Library, and that is titled What's Important to Me. It runs through the end of July, and it's an exhibit of art by Hoosiers with developmental disabilities. And again, this is on display in the atrium of the main branch of the IMCPL, Indianapolis Marion County Public Library.
Excellent. You know that Twisted House at the Indianapolis Arts Center's Arts Park?
I love that.
I love that, too. That's kind of like, ooh, you look at it and you think something's not quite right here. And you walk inside, you get a whole new perspective, which is the whole point. Vandra Pentecost, a local artist, has coordinated a project that involves seven panels, and each one depicts the Twisted House in a different artistic style: surrealism, pop art, expressionism, realism, cubism, impressionism, and the American scene movement. The first two panels were completed at the Broad Ripple Art Fair. Maybe you, beloved listener, participated in that. And the others have been completed at various places. And the finished community masterpiece is on display right now along the outreach lawn wall in the Arts Park. So another reason to go out and check out the Arts Park at the Indianapolis Arts Center.
Here's a fun way to buy some art and raise money for a good cause. Art Has a Heart. It's an art fair on Mass Avenue on July 24th in the parking lot of the Art Bank Gallery. That's right there on the corner of Mass and College. And it's a fair featuring the work of 30 artists and vendors, as well as, live music, food, activities. And it all raises money to provide memberships to the zoo and the Eitelgeorg and the State Museum for low-income children and their families. Very cool. That's coming up on July 24th.
Very nice. Hey, if you're looking for an event as you start to get those shopping lists together and think about back to school and notebooks mm-hmm. and pencils and rulers and all that kind of stuff, here's a fun event that the JCC is putting on, and they're going to make it an annual tradition. It is, are you ready for this? It's a live interactive movie experience, and the movie is Fiddler on the Roof.
How fun. And, so what you get to, like, be in the movie?
Well, you get to dress up and sing along.
If I Was a Rich
Man. Exactly. See,
da,
everybody
da, da, da.
Knows at least some of the songs. Mm-hmm. And so think Rocky Horror, but a little less twisted, maybe. It's coming up on August 8th from 6:30 to 9:30 at the JCC, which is at 6701 Hoover Road. And you are encouraged to dress in the garb of the era so that you can look like one of the characters.
And there'll be free popcorn for all and additional refreshments available for purchase. So it's the Fiddler on the Roof sing-along, a new tradition at the JCC, August 8th, 6:30.
Very cool. Hey, last thing I have is just a reminder that the 48-Hour Film Festival is coming back to Indianapolis. If you're a filmmaker and want to register for this, there's still an opportunity to register during just the next week or so. If you go to 48, that's the number, ourfilm.com/Indianapolis, and it is actually a 48-hour film festival that that is put on in part through Big Car Gallery, and that's actually going to take place at the end of the month, July 30th and August 1st, where people get a topic and get a team and props and all types of stuff, and they have 48 hours to make a movie, and
so
it's
cool.
A great competition.
Love that, love that. And speaking of films, and I'll connect the dots here, if you heard about Amanda, the film by local filmmaker Steve Mara, and you've just heard a little bit about the Indie Film Fest, International Film Festival, Amanda will be screened there this coming Tuesday, July 20th at 9:15. So you heard about it, now you can see it on
there
a local screen.
And cool. We'll be back next week with more things to do on
What'll We Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on WFYI.org.
Paper is both ancient and new, one of those materials that is so common that we sometimes take it for granted. When Canson Paper Company, which has been making this substance for literally centuries, was in town for a conference this last spring, Sharon Gamble invited Julia Giovanelli, a sales rep for Canson, to tell us more about paper.
Before we get into some of the specifics about lines of papers, I want you to talk to me about when you first became aware that paper was special or could take many different forms. Do you remember an aha moment when you were a little girl coloring, or was there some moment when you said, wow, paper is cooler than I thought it was?
Absolutely. When I was young, definitely I loved coloring and painting. But, you know, it really wasn't until I had my daughter and watching her rediscover it. I rediscovered it again, the importance into seeing how it's not only the finished art, but it's the whole process. And paper is such an important part of that process. So she and I all often do a lot of arts together, get messy. It's fun. That's part of that whole process of, you know, creating something. And papers being an essential part, cutting, pasting,
yeah,
doing collage work, it's wonderful.
How old is she now?
My daughter's 7.
Yeah, oh my gosh, that's a very creative age, and she's got a, and it's also a very tactile age, and I worry sometimes that because we all spend so much time at a computer, that paper becomes just kind of incidental. Paper's what you print out that email that has all the instructions on it, or you need to make a photocopy of a contract or whatever. But I worry sometimes that so few people actually sit down and write a letter, mm-hmm, or actually handle paper and think about it, that we're kind of getting out of touch with something that is really how old? When was the first paper created?
The first paper, well, our company has been around for 452 years.
Oh, my gosh.
Paper's been around since, I don't know.
Thousands
of years.
Yeah.
Developed in China, coming over to Europe, to the Middle East. So it's been around for so long. And you're right. Everything is now even text. It's not even full words anymore.
That's right.
So you miss out on really that whole process. And paper being that process, holding a book or coloring or drawing or sketching out something. But that's the important part. I mean, if you see like artists today, they don't, even architect, everyone, they don't just see something and then create it. The paper is an important aspect because they have to sketch it out, what they're thinking before they actually start a piece of art. They're sketching it out first, drawing it out first, visualizing, and then having it appear on the paper, which is why, you know, with Canson, we develop these papers And it's so important. It's an important aspect of any painting, any drawing, any right. musical aspect. So
it's almost been kind of the silent partner in a lot of those artistic endeavors, that as long as it's there, people sometimes don't think about it, but they should.
Exactly. I mean, but for a professional artist, they know when you have good quality paper, mm-hmm. and because they expect a lot out of the paper because it needs to perform well. It needs to last a long time, be archival. It needs to be able to erase well or scrape, or if you're doing watercolor, it needs to be able to take the water, have the right sizing on it. So all these aspects are very important, and the professional artist understands that. And you learn to appreciate paper the more you work with paper.
And there's a whole vocabulary associated with the qualities of paper. Is it coated or not? What is the weave? And so forth. There are dozens of terms, hundreds of terms used to describe paper. What would you say?
There's hundreds of different terms,
yeah.
Between sizing and the fibers. Long fibers are important and how the paper receives the material that is being used on, like acrylic or oil or watercolor pencils. Bright white is good for colored pencils because it makes it pop. There's all little nuances within paper that makes it different. You can have a sketch paper that has a tooth on it, which means it has a nice texture to it that the color pencil can actually pick up and hold nicely.
Are there, do you work with educators? Are there education, are there modules, are there classes specifically in how to match this medium to the artistic tool that you're using to pencil, to different kinds of paint?
Absolutely. We work with a lot of different artists. That's the most important part of our job, too, because they use the paper, and they're the ones that need to tell us how they need to use the paper, what they need to do. So we always are redeveloping paper, refining paper. One of the lines that I work with is called Fanboy, and this is a comic and manga line.
I was
line.
Reading about this, yeah. We might have some listeners who don't know what manga is, so you might want to say what that is.
So what manga is, it's pretty much a Japanese comics. It's how they draw the Japanese comics, and then anime is actually when they put it in animation.
Mm-hmm.
The comics, I mean, the comic book industry is about $600 to $800 million industry.
Wow.
They sell lots of books. And, they have these conventions, the Comic-Con conventions,
sure.
where over 200,000 people attend these conventions, and they get very into it. Well, what we've done is we worked with artists, comic and manga artists, that came to us knowing that we have this great base paper,
mm-hmm.
and we've specially formulated it for them.
So what are some of the qualities that it has?
So it's a very smooth paper, and it's bright white. It's able to erase very nicely. It's able to scrape. It has non-reproducible blue lines because the way that the artists use the paper. In this instance, they will draw it out, ink it, maybe they will scan it and maybe then finish coloring it on computer,
mm-hmm.
or they can ink it, and so it has to be able to take that ink very well and be able to scan and not show up all the blue lines, but instead
sure.
of having to spend all the time beforehand preparing the paper by measuring it out already, it's already done for you. So we have a range from comic strips. So it's in the nice form, comic book covers. And then even for beginners, we have an apprentice line that's really how to draw comic books. Because
really?
If you notice it, comic and manga has become very more into the mass market,
absolutely.
I should say, a lot in schools. And you'd be surprised at how many teachers are incorporating comic and manga into schools because all the students now are able to kind of get to a specific topic that they all can kind of relate to.
Mm-hmm.
They relate to comics. They relate to manga. They watch it and they draw it. And I was at one show in the Miami Book Fair and watching all these kids come up and how easily they picked it up and they were drawing their favorite comics. And it's still art, and it is still need to know the foundations, you know, for proportions as well as that. So they incorporate manga and comic as also part of art, how to teach art, but also in science. And you
I
know,
could see it in
like Superman and how why would this happen and
right,
occur.
Sure. So. I could even see it in language arts as part of storytelling.
Exactly.
And we live in such a visual society now. I suppose we always have, but we're so bombarded with images from computers and television now that it's not surprising that kids are more visual than ever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely. And they relate to comics. They still watch them too. But it's great to bring that from watching it to actually having them creating it themselves. You know, something maybe while they're watching if they want to, instead of just watching TV.
Yeah. Mix it up a little bit. Exactly. Hands on. Eric Carle is a name that's familiar to educators and a lot of kids. And you have a new line of Eric Carle products that are eco-friendly. Is that the correct term?
Yes.
How do you do that? What's different? Describe an eco-unfriendly paper, and then tell me how it's different to make it eco-friendly.
Okay. Well, this has been a phenomenal line to work with. As you know, Eric Carle is a legendary author and illustrator, and the reason why we licensed with Eric Carle is because of his philosophies, because he's an artist himself. He actually, the way he does his artwork is he paints on tissue paper, on translucent paper, which actually Canson invented translucent papers way back. And then he cuts them out and collages them. So it was very important that we chose something that made sense for Canson, you know, the way he does it. Plus, all his books are about the environment, The Very Hungry Caterpillar, mm-hmm. Brown Bear, What Do You See? So it's about the environment. So it made sense that we kind of developed this line with the environmental approach to it. Everything from our papers have 30%, at least 30% recycled content in there. Now, that's not to say that it's not archival, because we wanted to make sure that it was still acid-free and archival. Why? Because if my daughter made me something, I want to make sure that it lasts.
Her daughter and her granddaughter will be able to see her artwork.
Exactly.
Whether she becomes famous for it or not.
Exactly. But and then the quality also was very important. For me to watch, she'll color longer or, you know, stay at an activity longer if she has good quality paper. If she's not having fun, if she's not seeing any kind of results, it's okay. But now she's actually watching the results going, so she's actually creating it longer. So the Linus still has high-quality papers. Now, what makes this also environmentally friendly is not only does it have part recycled paper in it, that's fine. The inks that we use are soy-based mm-hmm. inks. It's everything from where do we get the paper, the pulp, to how we manufacture it. We have eco pledges on all of our pads, each one showing the energy that our manufacturing is energy efficient. The way we do our packaging is, you know, recycled. Mm-hmm. And if you go into our manufacturing facility, you'll see lights come on when they need to come on,
sure.
come off when they don't. So we took everything into account when we did this eco-friendly line, making sure that we were environmentally responsible. And then what we'll continue to do is have different kind of projects that we can use to reinforce the importance of recycling, for example.
Mm-hmm.
All the little scraps, here's a recycling project that you can do with all the scraps of paper rather than just throwing all the scraps of paper away, because it's not only when you get the pad, but if you notice with kids, they'll scribble, and then maybe some of them will be the scraps everywhere.
Sure,
so
sure.
What do you do with that? So those sure. are the kind of things that we're working on with this line.
This is a very philosophical company. This is not, you're not just manufacturing a product. You're thinking through where it comes from, its impact on the environment, where it goes to, and you're educating consumers along the way.
Exactly. And then also, it's not just making out of paper. It's also, we always think of the artist, no matter if they're 5 years old or,
or
85
years old and famous,
you know,
right?
You know, it's always because it's the end result, and that's the important part, because if somebody's going to take time to create something, they need it they need to trust in the base that they have,
right,
that it's going to perform exactly that they, like they need to. So, I mean, we have this range, but we also have it for a foundation range for students. We have an artist range for professionals. We have Excel range. So we have broad ranges of pads. We have art boards. We have pastel sheets, watercolor sheets, but all high quality and always keeping the artist in mind.
What's you've been with this company for how many years?
5 years.
5 years. What's the biggest change you've seen? Because I know this is a technology that's changing quickly. What's the biggest change you've seen in those 5 years?
Well, we're always developing new.
Yeah.
All the way up to the, one of my newest products that's actually taking paper and technology and kind of merging them together. As you were saying, only printing out papers. Well, we have another product that's called Paper Shell. And Paper Show is actually a digital writing solution. You have a pen that has a camera in it. You have a USB that actually has Bluetooth technology. And then you have the paper, which is made out of 100% recycled paper. It has microscopic black dots. So when you're writing on the paper, it automatically goes to the computer. Now, this one is more for a business aspect or a business application, although you could do architectural drawings on it if you'd
sure.
like, and being able to communicate. Again, we're talking being able to improve communication within a company. And this will actually eliminate the whiteboard or flip chart, or you can also annotate presentations with it. So
plus you're going to have an electronic record of it after you do it.
Absolutely, as a PDF or as a PowerPoint, and then you can email it to everybody instantly. So we're going from one extreme, you know, of the very traditional handmade papers down to the digital technology, but yet we're always focused on the paper aspect.
Sharon Gamble with Julia Giovanelli, a sales rep for Canson Paper Company. Canson is spelled C-A-N-S-O-N. Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Vaselli Wallrap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter again next Friday at 8 and Saturday at 4. I'll take a look at the forum taking place at the Athenaeum.
And I'll get to sample a new book on Indiana beers.
And also
on the air. And get a preview of what's going on at Clues for their upcoming season. And, of course, we'll have our arts calendar we call
What Do We Do? So please listen next Friday at 8 and Saturday at 4 for The Art of the Matter here on WFYI for your information.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support from listeners like you and from the Palladium at the Center for the Performing Arts, opening in January 2011. The Art of the Matter. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's Art of the Matter was produced and edited by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter on 90.1 FM, Indianapolis.